Oh, hey there.
Ah,
welcome.
Hi.
To the Womance Public Access read-along of Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. My name is Morgan. I read the odd chapters.
My name is Isabeau, and I read the even chapters.
An example of an odd-numbered chapter would be chapter 49, the chapter that we are going to read in this edition, in this episode. Isabeau read the last chapter, chapter 48, if you haven't figured that out already through your powers of deduction. And so Isabeau is going to quickly recap chapter 48 for us, for those listeners who are joining us on an every other weekly basis, just to bring them up to speed on what's happened in Pride and Prejudice so far.
Turns out in chapter 48, we double down on Mr. Bennet being a big old dick. Not a good dad. He doesn't keep his family, who's waiting on tenterhooks back at Longbourn, about his search for Lydia and the erstwhile Wickham. He's a bad correspondent. They're getting most of their news from their uncle, Mr. Gardner. And when he does arrive back with no news and seems sad and sort of out of sorts, Jane and Elizabeth do what they can to console him. And he's like, let me feel bad. And then he's like, I'm all right over it. And then Kitty's like, don't worry, Dad, I'll never do this. And he's like, you're never going to go to Brighton. I've learned my lesson. You're never going to go anywhere. You're going to suffer because your sister did this. And then he makes Kitty cry and he doesn't feel bad about it. Oh, and as a fun little, the man who is to inherit, Mr. Collins, wrote a letter to the family saying it were better that Lydia had died than do what she did with Wickham, so that they should all disown her as quickly as possible.
So he also wrote to just gloat that he wasn't married into the family.
Right, and that he'd talked to Catherine de Bourgh about it. So his discretion is obviously intact.
Yeah, chapter 48.
Just a lot of people being dicks.
Let's see if things can turn around.
I don't know.
If we can turn that frown upside down.
I don't
in
know.
Chapter 49. 2 days after Mr. Bennet's return, as Jane and Elizabeth were walking together in the shrubbery behind the house, they saw the housekeeper coming towards them, and concluding that she came to call them to their mother, went forward to meet her. But instead of the expected summons, when they approached her, she said to Miss Bennet, I beg your pardon, madam, for interrupting you, but I was in hopes you might have some good news from town, so I took the liberty of coming to ask. What do you mean, Hill? We have heard nothing from town. Dear madam, cried Mrs. Hill, in great admonishment, don't you know there is an express come for master from Mr. Gardiner? He has been here this half hour, and master has had a letter. Away ran the girls, too eager to get in, to have time for speech. They ran through the vestibule into the breakfast room, from thence to the library. Their father was in neither, and they were on the point of seeking him upstairs with their mother, when they were met by the butler, who said, If you are looking for my master, mum, he is walking towards the little copse. Upon this information, they instantly passed through the hall once more and ran across the lawn after their father, who was deliberately pursuing his way towards a small wood on one side of the paddock. Jane, who was not so light nor so much in the habit of running as Elizabeth, soon lagged behind, while her sister, panting for breath, came up to him and eagerly cried out, "Oh, Papa, what news? What news? Have you heard from my uncle?" "Yes, I have a letter from him by express." "Well, and what news does it bring, good or bad?" "Well, what is there of good to be expected?" said he, taking the letter from his pocket. "But perhaps you would like to read it." Elizabeth impatiently caught it from his hand. Jane now came up. "Read it aloud," said their father, "for I hardly know myself what it is about." "Dateline, Gracechurch Street, Monday, August 2nd. "My dear brother, at last I am able to send you some tidings of my niece, and such as, upon the whole, I hope will give you satisfaction. Soon after you left me on Saturday, I was fortunate enough to find out in what part of London they were. The particulars I reserve till we meet. It is enough to know they are discovered. I have seen them both."
"Then it is as I always hoped," cried Jane. "They are married."
"That's an assumption."
Elizabeth
read on. I have seen them both. They are not married. Nor can I find there was any intention of being so. Mm. But if you are willing to perform the engagements which I have ventured to make on your side, I hope it will not be long before they are. All that is required of you is to assure your daughter by settlement her equal share of the £5,000 secured among your children after the decease of yourself and my sister, and moreover to enter into an engagement of allowing her during your life £100 per annum. These are the conditions which, considering everything, I had no hesitation in complying with, as far as I thought myself privileged, for you. I shall send this by express, that no time may be lost in bringing me your answer. You will easily comprehend from these particulars that Mr. Wickham's circumstances are not so hopeless as they are generally believed to be. The world has been deceived in that respect, and I am happy to say there will be some little money, even when all his debts are discharged, to settle on my niece, in addition to her own fortune. If, as I conclude will be the case, you send me full powers to act in your name throughout the whole of this business, I will immediately give directions to Haggerston for preparing a proper settlement. There will not be the smallest occasion for your coming to town again. Therefore, stay quietly at Longbourn, and depend on my diligence and care. Send back your answer as soon as you can, and be careful to write explicitly. We have judged it best that my niece should be married from this house, of which I hope you will approve. She comes to us today. I shall write again as soon as anything more is determined on. Yours, etc., Edward Gardner. Sounds like a scam.
Honestly, it seems too good to be true.
Is it possible, cried Elizabeth when she had finished. Can it be possible that he will marry her? Wickham is not so undeserving, then, as we have thought him, said her sister. My dear father, I congratulate you. And have you answered the letter? Asked said Elizabeth.
No, but it must be done soon.
Most earnestly did she then entreat him to lose no more time before he wrote. Oh, my dear father, she cried, come back and write immediately. Consider how important every moment is in such a case. Let me write for you, said Jane, if you dislike the trouble yourself.
I dislike it very much, he replied, but it must be done. And so saying, he turned back with them and walked towards the house.
And may I ask, said Elizabeth, but the terms, I suppose, must be complied with. Complied with? I'm only ashamed of his asking so little. And they must marry, yet he is such a man.
Yes, yes, they must marry. There is nothing else to be done. But there are two things that I want very much to know. One is, how much money your uncle has laid down to bring it about, and the other, how I am ever to pay him.
Mm-hmm. Money? My uncle? Cried Jane. What do you mean, sir?
I mean that no man in his senses would marry Lydia on so slight a temptation as 100 a year during my life, and 50 after I am gone.
That is very true, said Elizabeth, mm-hmm. though it had not occurred to me before. His debts to be discharged, and something still to remain. Oh, it must be my uncle's doings. Generous, good Nan. I'm afraid he has distressed himself. A small sum could not do all this.
No, said her father. Wickham's a fool if he takes her with a farthing less than £10,000. I should be sorry to think so ill of him in the very beginning of our relationship.
£10,000? Heaven forbid! How is half such a sum to be repaid?
Mr. Bennet made no answer, and each of them, deep in thought, continued silent until they reached the house. Their father then went to the library to write, and the girls walked to the breakfast room.
Are they really to be married? Cried Elizabeth, as soon as they were by themselves. How strange this is! And for this we are to be thankful, that they should marry. Small is their chance of happiness, and wretched as is his character, we are forced to rejoice. Oh, Lydia!
I comfort myself with thinking, replied Jane, that he certainly would not marry Lydia if he had not a real regard for her. Though our kind uncle has done something towards clearing him, I cannot believe that £10,000 or anything like it has been advanced. He has children of his own and may have more. How could he spare half £10,000?
If we are able to learn what Wickham's debts have been, said Elizabeth, and how much is settled on his side on our sister, we shall exactly know what Mr. Gardiner has done for them, because Wickham has not sixpence of his own. The kindness of my uncle and aunt can never be requited. Their taking her home and affording her their personal protection and countenance is such a sacrifice to her advantage as years of gratitude cannot enough acknowledge. By this time, she is actually with them. If such goodness does not make her miserable now, she will never deserve to be happy. What a meeting for her when she first sees my aunt. We must endeavor to forget all that has passed on either side, said Jane. I hope and trust they will yet be happy. His consenting to marry her is proof, I will believe, that he is to come to the right way of thinking. Their mutual affection will steady them, and I flatter myself that they will settle so quietly and live in so rational a manner as may in time make their past imprudence forgotten.
Okay, Jane.
Their conduct has been such, replied Elizabeth, as neither you nor I nor anybody can ever forget it. It is useless to talk of it. You know, fair enough. Things are so bad.
Certainly no one in Meryton is going to let anybody forget.
Yeah, you just got to kind of... Jane's way of thinking kind of works out here.
True.
It now occurred to the girls that their mother was in all likelihood perfectly ignorant of what had happened. They went to the library, therefore, and asked their father whether he would not wish them to make it known to her. He was writing, and without raising his head, coolly replied, "Just as you please. May we take my uncle's letter to read to her? Take whatever you like and get away." Elizabeth took the letter from his writing table, and they went upstairs together. Mary and Kitty were both with Mrs. Bennet. One communication would, therefore, do for all. After a slight preparation for good news, the letter was read aloud. Mrs. Bennet could hardly contain herself. As soon as Jane had read Mr. Gardiner's hope of Lydia's being soon married, her joy burst forth, and every following sentence added to its exuberance. She was now in an irritation as violent from delight as she had ever been fidgety from alarm and vexation. To know that her daughter would be married was enough. She was disturbed by no fear for her felicity, nor humbled by any remembrance of her misconduct. "My dear, dear Lydia," she cried, "this is delightful indeed. She will be married. I shall see her again. She will be married at 16. My good, kind brother, I knew how it would be. I knew he would manage everything. How I long to see her, and to see dear Wickham, too. But the clothes, the wedding clothes, I will write to my sister Gardiner about them directly. Lizzie, my dear, run down to your father and ask him how much he will give her. Stay, stay, I will go myself. Ring the bell, Kitty, for Hill. I will put on my things in a moment. My dear, dear Lydia, how merry we shall be together when we meet." Her eldest daughter endeavored to give some relief to the violence of these transports by leading her thoughts to the obligations which Mr. Gardiner's behavior laid them all under. "For we must attribute this happy conclusion," she added, "in a great measure to his kindness. We are persuaded that he has pledged himself to assist Mr. Wickham with money." "Well," cried her mother, "it is all very right. Who should do it but her own uncle? If he had not had a family of his own, I and my children must have had all his money, you know, and it is the first time we have ever had anything from him, except a few presents. Well, I am so happy. In a short time I shall have a daughter married. Mrs. Wickham, how well it sounds, and she was only 16 last June. My dear Jane, I'm in such a flutter, I'm sure I can't write, so I will dictate and you will write for me. We will settle with your father about the money afterwards, but the things should be ordered immediately." She was then proceeding to all the particulars of calico, muslin, and cambric, and would shortly have dictated some very plentiful orders had not Jane, though with some difficulty, persuaded her to wait till her father was at leisure to be consulted. One day's delay, she observed, would be of small importance, and her mother was too happy to be quite so obstinate as usual. Other schemes, too, came into her head. "I will go to Meryton," said she, "as soon as I am dressed, and tell the good news to my sister Phillips. And as I come back, I can call on Lady Lucas and Mrs. Long. Kitty, run down and order the carriage. An airing would do me a great deal of good, I am sure. Girls, can I do anything for you in Meryton? Oh, here comes Hill, my dear Hill. Have you heard the good news? Miss Lydia is going to be married, and you shall all have a bowl of punch to make merry at her wedding." Mrs. Hill began instantly to express her joy. Elizabeth received her congratulations amongst the rest, and then, sick of this folly, took refuge in her own room, that she might think with freedom. Poor Lydia's situation must, at best, be bad enough. but that it was no worse, she had no need to be thankful. She felt it so, and though in looking forward neither rational happiness nor worldly prosperity would be justly expected for her sister, and looking back to what they had feared only 2 hours ago, she felt all the advantages of what they had gained.
Well, Lydia's to be married.
Thank goodness.
Yep.
Best outcome from a very bad situation. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, probably for Lydia.
And her numerous sisters.
Certainly for the family at large. I think there's a telling moment when Elizabeth says to Jane, and this is what we're supposed to rejoice, which tells us, like, how the author might feel about this and gives us a clue as to how we're supposed to feel about Lydia's personal happiness in her own future.
One thing I noticed about this chapter, I feel like this is the most we've heard about the servants.
Yeah, absolutely.
By far and away. And it kind of irked me that they call her Hill, right? Not Miss Hill or Mrs. Hill, like a gym teacher, but, you know, kind of one of those, like, stark slaps in the face of, like, hierarchy and how it seems like a part of life in the Regency that Austin isn't questioning.
Yeah, absolutely. I also feel like this is one of the first chapters in a long time that's been so explicitly about money.
I feel so disoriented reading about money in this book because I have no idea. Like, to me, I'm like, is $100 a lot? Is it a little?
£100 a year is not that much.
I mean, yeah, that's what I found out as I continued to read. But when you initially read it, I guess if you were contemporaneous, you would have been like, whoa, you know. But instead I was like, oh, yeah. Are we? Money is a very disorienting topic in these old books.
It is.
And it's interesting because it is such like a central theme of this text.
Mm-hmm.
Not even like a central theme, like the specifics and details help you to understand the energy of the story you're reading.
I also think like the fact that it's so naked about it, like, we know at the beginning that Darcy has $10,000 a year, and what Mr. Bennett says, like, he's a fool if he takes a penny less than $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's talk of Wickham's debts. And like, at one point earlier, she, like, the author said that, you know, she believes it's inflated, but it's been reported as like $20,000 in and around Meryton and Brighton. The reason why I'm like pulling on this thread is because I read a lot of historicals in the Regency period, and they aren't this naked about money, right?
Historicals are like contemporaneous novels.
Contemporaneous novels that are written about the Regency era.
You mean books written in our time period? Well,
written now about, okay, that take place, right, in the Regency. And they'll be, right, like, oh, he has a lot of money, or, oh, she isn't an heiress.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, like, they don't put a number on it.
I mean, you don't really need to.
You don't.
And it would also be intimidating to put the right number on it. You know, like, how sci-fi movies tend to be like, we traveled, like, 10,000 miles, you know, mega miles or whatever. And then that's like, oh, that's only, like, you're not even to Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people get that stuff wrong all the time, and then they get made fun of.
That's true.
So it would require some additional Googling. To be specific, if we are reading like a contemporaneous like rom-com, they're not that cagey about money. And that's more close to what Jane Austen was doing.
Although sometimes I feel like they are, like, especially rom-com romance novels where like I have a sense of how much somebody has or doesn't. But it also, like, oftentimes the worlds are sort of thin in that way. Like, how much does a ghostwriter earn? Like, Colleen Hoover was actually a really good example of being specific in that book that we read, because we knew precisely how much money that person had in their checking account and how much their advance was worth. But I'm thinking about other books that we've read, and Colleen Hoover wasn't a rom-com, but like The Dead Romantics, like, that was where it's like, you know, she lived in like what felt like Monica's apartment in New York, and I'm like, As a ghostwriter? Okay, maybe.
I feel like Tessa Bailey, I remember that having some kind of specific numbers, but I can't recall them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that novel we read way back, which was like she's from Chicago and she's living in London working at the Victoria and Albert, that had some very specific amounts.
That was the Ruthie Knox about last night.
Yeah, and that had specific money. I think it's easier to write in your...
It's easier, think, yeah.
Yeah, to spout it out. And, like, that's what Jane Austen's doing.
I thought you were going to say the other Chicago one, which was making fun of Alinea, not the girl you marry.
I'm sure that one had some specific numbers for how much it costs to go to Alinea. Maybe. There's tiers.
It's true.
None of them are low.
All right. Well, with that, loosen your prejudices.
But never your prides.
Mwah. Mwah.